and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
We can't afford to overextend ourselves in these labor negotiations.
In his first sit-down interview since being ousted, we talk with Chicago Public Schools Chief Pedro Martinez on his firing and the latest on contract negotiations with the teachers union. And our Spotlight Politics team on Michael Madigan's testimony in his corruption trial, an effort to lower the citywide speed limit, and more. And now to some of today's top stories. Former House Speaker Michael Madigan's testimony concluded in federal court today after 4 days on the stand. And the end may be in sight for jurors after 3 months of testimony and evidence. Today, during cross-examination, jurors heard an episode where Madigan met with newly elected Governor J.B. Pritzker and, quote, put the knife into Cullerton 3 or 4 times over an advertising campaign during the 2018 election cycle. That's even though Madigan and then Illinois Senate President Cullerton are family friends. Madigan's presented himself as careful, shrewd, and non-confrontational throughout his testimony. His defense team is expected to rest its case on Thursday with closing arguments slated for next week. The age Illinois drivers need to retake their behind-the-wheel driving test is currently 79, but a bipartisan piece of legislation would raise it to 87, citing statistics from the Illinois Department of Transportation that found the crash rate for drivers 75 years and up is actually lower than drivers ages 16 to 74.
My top priority is keeping Illinois roads safe and always making improvements to ensure the safety of everyone who shares them. Full stop.
The Illinois Secretary of State's office collaborated with AARP Illinois to draft the Road Safety and Fairness Act, which is also aiming to keep unsafe motorists of all ages off the streets. Illinois is currently the only state that requires senior drivers to take road tests regularly. If you're looking to sign up for health care through the Affordable Care Act, tomorrow is your deadline. Nearly 24 million people have signed up for coverage in 2025 so far. That's according to the Biden administration. That's nearly double when President Trump was last in office, when roughly 12 million people signed up for coverage. The Biden administration credits the increase to heightened outreach, an easier enrollment process, and larger federal subsidies that have allowed some low-income Americans to get plans with no or very low premiums. Those enhanced subsidies were put in place when Democrats controlled Congress earlier in Biden's term and are set to expire at the end of 2025. A giant in Chicago business and philanthropy has died. David W. Granger was chairman and CEO of W.W. Granger, Inc. from 1968 to 1997, a company founded by his father in 1927. It's now a Fortune 300 company that sells a wide range of products and services for maintenance, repair, and operations. Granger also headed the Granger Foundation for more than 40 years. Colleagues call Granger a quiet and generous philanthropist. The foundation has provided significant support for education, healthcare, museums, and other cultural institutions, including transformative gifts to WTTW. Here, it funded and endowed our largest studio, the Granger Studio, and also provided a gift to enable the creation of the Granger Foundation Studio Control and Audio Suite for WTTW News. David Granger was 97. Up next, an exclusive sit-down with Chicago Public Schools CEO Pedro Martinez, right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago Public Schools has its hands full. The district has been negotiating with the teachers union over its contract for nearly a year. An almost entirely new board will be sworn in tomorrow, half of them elected for the first time in history. And just before Christmas, the current board voted unanimously to terminate CEO Pedro Martinez. But Martinez is still the CEO for the next 6 months under the terms of his contract. Here to discuss all of this and more in his first sit-down interview since that termination is CEO Pedro Martinez. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Brandis.
So as we've mentioned, just before the Christmas holiday, the mayor's newly appointed Board of Education voted to terminate you. Were you surprised by that move?
I was very disappointed, Brandis, because, you know, I've always been clear as a CPS student, somebody who'd grown up in Chicago. I mean, this was the dream job for me. I was offered quite a bit of money to leave the job immediately. To do that for me would have been so wrong. I mean, with so much going on in the district. And so, you know, per my contract, you know, I chose to stay on for at least the next 6 months, and I'm going to continue to focus on doing the great work that we've been doing.
At least the next 6 months. Is there an option or an alternative where you end up staying longer?
Well, you know, I mean, you know, look, I'm going to continue to do the job that I'm doing, and we've seen amazing success. My team and I, we're building strong momentum. We have, you know, many new board members coming on. So with that, again, you know, I'm realistic about the decision that was made, Brandis, but at the same time, I can tell you, you know, my heart and the energy and the momentum that we've had, we're going to continue to build on that.
Is there any circumstance under which the new board that gets sworn in tomorrow could reinstate you?
They could. They could, absolutely.
Okay. Last week, we also spoke with Mayor Brandon Johnson, and we asked the mayor about the board's decision, and here's a bit of his answer.
I know exactly what parents are wishing for in this moment. I know the needs of teachers in this moment. And the Board of Education is carrying out my vision to ensure that no matter where you live in the city of Chicago, that you have class sizes that are small, that there are libraries and librarians in every single school, social workers, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists. These are the expectations and the hopes of parents.
Have you spoken with the mayor since this vote?
I have not, Brandis. In fact, we haven't spoken since really last summer when this really whole ordeal started. By the way, self-inflicted, because when you look at what all the work we've done, nobody has invested more in our neighborhood schools than myself and my team. We're seeing the greatest success we've ever seen with our black students. We're number one in the country in recovery, academic recovery for our black students, number two in the country for our Latino students, and we've done it through an equitable lens, very aligned around vision. But of course, you know, these other issues that have come up around borrowing, around really frankly, you know, working with the union and making sure that we're protecting the district and our children in good faith. I mean, these are the issues that have always been in contention.
What challenges can you perceive, considering the circumstances that you're operating under right now? You'll have a new board tomorrow, but also, a teachers union that has not always been your best friend, from in the public eye anyway, as well as a mayor that you haven't spoken to since, you say, last summer in any real amount. How difficult is your job going to be for however long you're in it now?
You know, in some ways, Brandis, it's probably easier today because I can, you know, just continue to operate in good faith. And I can tell you, I've been so proud of my team and the way they've handled negotiations. By having still me in the role, they know that this is the thing that I've always asked of them. You always act professional. You always act in good faith. And Brandis, we're closer today on this contract than ever before. You know, just context, the last two contracts that were negotiated in CPS, one took 18 months, one took 14 months. We're barely on month 10 of this process with a much more complicated contract with 700 proposals, much more complicated finances, and yet we're on pace to settle this at the fastest rate ever.
And of course, the one that took 14 months, the last contract, we know it did result in a teacher strike. Yesterday, Chicago Teachers Union President Stacey Davis Gates, she did join us to discuss the ongoing status of negotiations. And here's a bit of what she said about prep time and costs.
That's the same thing that our members want to do. They want to prepare to receive the young people. So all of what we're talking about is doable because we have the time already in our schedule. We do not have to marginalize instructional time. We can do this work. These are non-economic.
So she says non-economic. And it sounds like, you know, you're only 1% apart, really, on salary raises for teachers, whether it's, you know, 4 or 5% raise. CTU is also, though, calling for librarians, nurses, additional prep time, fine arts instruction. So there is a bit of economics in all of that. But is all of this unaffordable for CPS?
So you know, Brandon, again, more context. In this current budget, every school has a minimum of what we call 3 holistic teachers. That allows every school to have PE, the arts, and a third choice. It could either be a librarian, it could be a world language teacher. That's a choice of the school. So the resources are already in the schools. It's really both building the pipeline. So our proposal, for example, for librarians is let's build that pipeline so schools can have that choice. In addition, when you think about planning time and prep time, our teachers receive the highest amount of planning time in the country among large urban districts, over 330 minutes per week, more than an hour per day. And with that, you know, I disagree that it's a non-academic, it's a non-financial issue, because the only way to expand planning time is either to reduce core instruction, which we're just against because our children need more core instruction, more reading, more math, more science and social studies, and or to add more staff. And so the only way it's non-financial is you add more staff, but the day is the day. So for us, but I will tell you, Brian, we're still, you know, having great conversations about this. We're having, and every proposal that was provided to us, we've given such a thoughtful response. And by the way, what we're doing is really understanding what the real problem is. So for example, you know, teacher evaluations. There was a state, a survey or a study that was done that said that, you know, that some of our teachers really struggle, especially in our highest poverty schools, especially our Black teachers. We looked at our own data. Our retention rate for Black teachers is the same as our white teachers, 92%. What we did recognize within, and by the way, less than 1% of our teachers were affected by teacher evaluations. What we did see, though, is that teachers that work in high poverty areas, which tend to be our Black and Latino teachers, they do struggle more. So what we propose is let's provide more support for our teachers. Let's not lower the expectations or the standards, because what's a parent going to say, Brian, is when their children's not at grade level, just because they live in poverty, and we're saying to them, well, the way we're going to solve it is we're going to lower the standards for our teachers. No, we provide more support for our teachers as well as our students.
Well, and I think CTU, though, might say that schools should not have to choose between a librarian and a world language instructor or some other fine arts teacher, that they should have both and a librarian.
So again, that's the minimum, Brandon. So our larger schools have 8 holistic teachers. And so what we believe in, and this is a philosophical difference, we believe the local school councils, parents, the teachers at the school, along with their principal, should make that decision. And so that's really the difference. But the resources are there at the school.
CTU argues that the district has more than $1 billion in reserves, but yesterday during a press conference, you and your team explained the district only has about $66 million in reserves, that for fiscal year 2025, you've got $817 million in debt service payments alone, and of course, projected annual deficits approaching $1 billion as we get closer and closer to the year 2030. How did we get here? Because it does sound a bit familiar to about 8-10 years ago when the district then had a $1 billion deficit.
Yeah, so Brandis, you know, back in 2015, 2016, the district went negative in cash $1 billion. And because they were so worried about, you know, vendors not providing services, us going bankrupt, they changed some accounting rules that allowed them to cover that up. And so we're still living with that today. And so the only reserves we really have is what we have in the bank, which is $66 million. That's what we ended the year with. With that, I also, you know, as we look at our, you know, we've been very transparent about our deficits. We have a structural deficit of $500 million. Brandis, we have never allowed it to get bigger than that. And even with the COLA proposals, it'll get a little bit bigger, but not much, because we know that there's a revenue source. As we're advocating for more state revenue, we have TIFs, $19 billion that right now, you as a taxpayer, I as a taxpayer, we're paying into that, but yet we have no access to those revenues. If those didn't exist, $600 million a year would be coming to the district every single year. And so, again, it's a complicated issue, one that I will continue to work with the city council. By the way, this was always the contention with the mayor, that, you know, instead of trying to ask the district to borrow, to do responsible things, why don't we look at the existing revenue sources when the CTU is aligned with this? He was aligned with it even when he was running as mayor.
Okay, I've got about a minute left. Civic Federation also says that CPS needs to begin a process of right-sizing the district spending, making a long-term financial plan, develop plans to advocate for revenue. It says a state financial takeover is not out of the question. I'm not really sure that anybody else is talking about that just yet. But how do you respond to the Civic Federation's assessment in about 35 seconds?
So I think, again, TIF revenues is a part of the solution, Brandis. You know, we also need to look at efficiencies in the district. I'm very confident that we can do that together. I don't believe a takeover is necessary, but I do agree with the Civic Federation. It is. We're in a very vulnerable state, and this is why it's so important that we operate in good faith, whether it's in contract negotiations or managing our budgets.
15 seconds. Your thoughts on the new board being sworn in tomorrow and how working with them will be in the future?
I'm actually very excited. You know, I've met the new board members coming in. I see a fresh set of energy, and I'm excited to work with them.
Okay. Pedro Martinez, CPS CEO. Best of luck to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Brandis.
Up next, efforts to change the city's sanctuary city protections with our Spotlight Politics team. Stay with us. Former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan wraps up his testimony in his corruption and racketeering trial. Meanwhile, CTA President Dorval Carter is on his way out. And the fight over a new teacher's contract continues with little sign of an agreement in sight. Although, we'll get to that. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, gang. So, let's start with Madigan, and then we'll get to the other stuff. Former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan wrapping his testimony in that corruption and racketeering trial. Today, he was asked by prosecutors about 2018 comments that he made to co-defendant Michael McLean about how he, quote, put a knife into then-Senate President John Cullerton. Amanda, what was he referring to?
So this was on the heels of Madigan being pretty well sullied in the court of public opinion by former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. And Cullerton had, in a sense, piled on top of that, taken advantage of Madigan's, you know, bad name, and ran a campaign ad calling for term limits on leaders like Madigan. Madigan, none too happy with that. So this was evidently he'd had a meeting with the governor who was elected instead of Rauner. Of course, that's our current governor, J.B. Pritzker. And Madigan was proud to McLean, sort of bragging that he had talked down Cullerton, stabbed him in the back, to Governor Pritzker.
Despite the fact that he also, on the stand, admitted, yeah, we're family friends.
Cullerton
is the godson, godfather to my son.
Exactly, godfather. And so I think that was the objective, right, of the prosecution to say, hey, look what he can do to somebody that is not just an ally, but a longtime good friend. He can look you in the eye and say, that's the godfather of my son, and still be proud to have stabbed him in the back. What Madigan didn't say there is there's a long stretch between there, I think. Cullerton and Madigan had clearly both, after he was made godfather, Cullerton rose in his own ranks and became president of the state Senate. So clearly politics is rough and tumble. We all know that. That's what we talk about here at this table. But it is something that perhaps the prosecution is really hoping the jury is going to find distasteful.
Okay, so also a little bit of breaking news this afternoon. Standard & Poor's lowering the city's debt rating, citing its, quote, sizable structural budgetary imbalance. How much of this is a surprise, and how much of it is a blow to the Johnson administration?
It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Standard & Poor warned the city that they were going to do this if the city did not make structural changes to its budget. The city council declined to do so, and this is the result to it. What really remains to be seen about how much will it cost the city in terms of, you know, borrowing costs, interest rates, whether they'll be able to sort of borrow the way that they had planned to. But it's an indication that Chicago's finances are severely out of whack. I keep saying this. And it is, you know, essentially a warning to the city council and to the mayor that things need to change significantly and that Chicago's on the wrong track. Now, it's no doubt a blow to the mayor, who had sort of hoped that this wouldn't happen. There's a reason why his press release today described it as a ratings adjustment and not a ratings downgrade.
It's all in the language. Yeah.
But this is, you know, essentially a vote of no confidence in the budget. And, you know, had the city council approved a $300 million property tax hike, it's likely this wouldn't have happened because, again, that is a structural change to the city's budget. The city council said no thanks.
And it signals also as well a lack of confidence, not just in this current budget, but a lack of faith that Chicago is going to make the hard choices, the easy ones off the table. Property tax or what have you will have to be part of the next budget, S&P believes. And they also signaled in their ratings downgrade, is what it is, that they don't necessarily have faith that elected officials are willing to take those tough steps.
Okay. So let's get back to Chicago Public Schools. Heather, any reaction to what we've just heard from CEO Martinez?
Well, listening to both him and Stacey Davis Gates, the president of CTU, yesterday, it's clear that not only do they not agree on sort of how this contract should be settled, they disagree on sort of the facts at issue. And that always makes it really tough to get a deal because, you know, you had, I think, a very sort of pointed back and forth. Well, what about the reserve fund? You know, CTU says, well, there's $100 million there. Well, Martinez is actually at $66 million. It is very difficult to negotiate a complicated contract like the one that the teachers have with CPS when you can't sort of agree on those fundamental facts. And until there's sort of an agreement on sort of what the district is sort of dealing with, it's not really possible to solve the larger issues about teacher prep and sort of how much the pay raise is going to be and that sort of thing.
I also thought it was pretty noteworthy to hear that, you know, Martinez and the mayor, you know, essentially have not been speaking for months. Now, certainly, you know, the mayor is not, you know, officially one of the leaders of CPS. He's not the, you know, leader of CTU, but this is someone who, you know, has a great deal of sway over the public school system by design. So to hear that that relationship, you know, clearly, I think it was pretty clear that it had broken down significantly, but to just have that in such stark terms at a time when there are huge questions about the district's fiscal future, about the status of CTU negotiations, to hear that there isn't really much of a dialogue there at all.
And about Martinez's own role, of course, because I remember when he was on the show, when we first really got wind that he was, that the mayor wanted him ousted, something, of course, that the mayor continually denied, at least in public, that that was even the case. And at the time, Martinez had said, right when schools were opening, no, we didn't really talk. Like, we saw each other, but we didn't chat. And that's still the case throughout all of these questions about, yes, the contract and the future of the schools, but also about Martinez himself.
And as the mayor is advocating for, you know, having been elected to implement his vision for Chicago Public Schools, you'd think there'd be some conversation with the man that the mayor chose to keep on board to run and operate Chicago Public Schools. So, yes, that is a good point. Dorval Carter stepping down from the CTA, Nick, after nearly a decade of leading the CTA. He's had his share of criticism, obviously, as well. The mayor faced regular calls to fire Dorval Carter, but stood by him. Why is he leaving now?
You're absolutely right. I mean, the calls to fire Dorval Carter, you know, predated Mayor Johnson's election. And he said during his own campaign and his inaugural speech that there needed to be changes to transit in Chicago, that it needed to be safe and reliable, that it needed an overhaul. Now, we should note the mayor cannot simply fire the head of the CTA. The mayor appoints the CTA president, but it takes an action of the board. Certainly, the mayor can use...
Much like CPS.
Exactly. Yes. And, of course, the mayor can use their void appointee. They can use the bully pulpit, they can use public pressure to get the board to act or to get, you know, the leader of such an agency to resign. All that being said, you know, one of the things that Carter said about his own tenure and that folks who, you know, would give him some credit said was that he was really good at getting, you know, federal money for big deal infrastructure projects like the Red Purple modernization, like some of the work they've done on the Blue Line, like some of the work they've done, you know, on the Green Line, like this big Red Line extension that the city is now in line for nearly $2 billion. $1 billion of federal money. So I think that was sort of, you know, the red line extension really was Carter's crowning achievement. It had been his priority for years and years, and something that he advocated to the mayor's office for, to say, this is a huge priority and this is something I can get over the finish line. And now that that, you know, full funding agreement is in place, I think it was a natural time for Carter to step down.
So city council tomorrow, Heather, we've got about 45 seconds left, set to vote on an amendment that would weaken the city's protections for undocumented people and allow the Chicago Police Department to work with immigrations and customs enforcement agents in some circumstances. What's at stake here?
Well, for nearly 40 years, Chicago has been a sanctuary city. This would essentially return the protections back to the level where they were before 2021, when it was expanded to basically eliminate any sort of possibility for police officers to work with ICE agents. Potentially, this would put undocumented immigrants who are arrested but not convicted of a certain range of crimes, drugs, gangs, prostitution, at risk of having then been turned over to ICE. It's not clear whether there's a majority of city council votes, but it is going to be a very fraught debate tomorrow as thousands of Chicagoans face the prospect of mass deportations. Right.
Frightening for them, I'm sure. That is Spotlight. Thanks to Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, and Nick Blumberg, gang. And that is our show for this Tuesday night. Stay connected with our reporters, these folks, and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Efforts to lower the citywide speed limit, changes to the aforementioned Chicago Sanctuary City protections, and more at City Hall. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that supports free educational initiatives in the legal profession.